On this week's 51%, we hear from a filmmaker and educator on transgender discrimination, bring you a story about how one area in the U.S. is homing in on sex trafficking, and meet an actress whose theater group transcends the stage.
We believe at Transcendence that all of life is a work of art, so it's beyond just what's on stage.
I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
I've loved the freedom of being inside. Need a new start and a different time. Something grows in the space between me and is twisting and changing this fragile body.
A filmmaker and psychology professor have been teaming up to educate about transgender people. Recently, they delivered a lecture and screened two documentary films about transgender youth in the Catskills region of New York. Their event took place in Woodstock, where one of the films, All About Amy, won for Best Short Documentary at the 2015 Woodstock Film Festival. Passing Ellenville is the other documentary. Ellenville is in Ulster County, New York. Filmmaker and photographer Gene Fisher and Dr. Susan Nolan discuss gender-based stereotypes with regard to transgender people and bias in the media, and transgender discrimination overall. The documentaries follow two impoverished transgender youth and their transgender mentor, making their way through the gender transition process while trying to survive in an economically depressed town in the Catskills. Gene Fisher is a photographer and with Sam Centaur co-directed the films. Fisher talks about why he became involved in focusing on the transgender community through photos and film.
I'm a cisgender man, meaning that I am male, identify as male. I am gay. When I was these kids' age, when I first met them, you know, I was 18, 19, I was struggling with my sexuality as a gay man. And I just saw so many similarities with them struggling in their transgender identity at the same age. And that's what really drew me to tell their stories, because I wish I had someone, you know, I went to gay reparation therapy when I was 21 years old. I was sent by my parents. So, you know, it's really the same kind of things as a gay man, you know, 20 years later, what's happening for trans people. So I don't think this is going to change overnight. The fact that we see Caitlyn Jenner on TV or I Am Jazz does create a little bit of complacency. And it's great that what's going on with the transgender bathroom issue, but I don't think it's going to change overnight. It's going to be a long time still.
Dr. Susan Nolan, clinical psychologist and now psychology professor at Seton Hall University in New Jersey, says she hopes audience members walk away from the film and discussion with a better understanding of transgender people.
One of the most important things in reducing prejudice is contact. But even contact through getting to know somebody and about their lives in a much more personal way. This person's not just a transgender person, they're also a community activist, or they work in a garden, or they are going to school. So learning about them as a full person helps to reduce prejudice. So I hope people walk away with a fuller understanding of what transgender people are and that they're people just like all of us.
She says discrimination against transgender people is higher than that against others in the LGBT community, and poverty is a major issue.
I think people don't understand the level of discrimination and how that ties to poverty, because what we see is the famous people who are transgender, who are actors, or Caitlyn Jenner and Chaz Bono, and we see these people as being, they're very wealthy, so we don't get a sense of the typical person, and that's extremely atypical. So I think more and more, as we're including it in courses, for example, I write an introductory psychology textbook that's used widely across the U.S., and I included some of the stories from the people in Gene's films in that book, and it's really amazing when I talk to students who've read that section or seen some of this, the way that they change their empathy toward the opening story of the chapter that I use is James, who is featured prominently in Gene's first film, and people really can resonate with James just as a young person who also happens to be transgender. So I think that's really huge in reducing prejudice, to be able to have students be able to think beyond the T, that this is a whole person.
And she speaks to another issue.
One of the big issues is that the rates of depression, other mental health issues, and particularly suicide are a lot higher in the LGBT community than non-LGBT. For example, among young people, gay people are 4 times as likely to attempt suicide and 9 times as likely to attempt suicide if they're rejected by their family. These rates are even higher among transgender. So I can't emphasize enough how essential the kinds of things that Jean and Sam and others are doing to raise awareness so that the stigma and the rejection and even the violence against this community diminish. The psychological ramifications of the rejection part are really enormous.
Nolan talks about change in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, or DSM, published by the American Psychiatric Association.
And until the DSM-5, gender identity disorder was a disorder. So simply being transgender meant you had a mental illness. In 2013, they changed it to gender dysphoria. So you're only diagnosed with a mental illness if you are unhappy and meet diagnostic criteria for being unhappy, essentially, with being transgender. So it's no longer a mental illness to be transgender, which was a huge shift in the psychiatric and psychological community. There was a big push to take it out entirely because why have gender dysphoria? Many people thought, well, if they, say, have depression or whatever, why not just give them that diagnosis? In the end, this was a kind of a compromise, with the idea being if somebody did want treatment for this, it would give, I mean, very practical, it would give an insurance code. That was sort of part of the logic on that side. But there was a big push to take anything involving gender identity, just to take it out entirely, which I believe would have been even better.
Meanwhile, Fisher points out what is next regarding the films.
Even after we did the films, we've kept filming. You know, even after we start, you know, cut the films and showed the short documentaries, we've been filming for the additional 2 years because we know we want to follow the stories. And we are now trying to either do one of two things. We're going to show it into a, make it into a feature film with more updated footage, or we're talking to a producer about trying to package it for TV, which would be my ideal because we would be seen by more eyes on TV than we would be on in a film, in a small film.
He says the stories have evolved slowly.
The other thing that's really interesting in the new footage over, I would say, the last year, James and Ashley, when I first met them 4 years ago, you know, there were two kids in a town, in a little town that's heavily poverty-ridden in Ellenville. They were aligned. They were very different people, but they were brought together on this one issue because they were the two trans kids. But now, after 4 years and feeling better about themselves and who they're becoming, they're both on hormones, their personalities have really come out, and they don't get along. And they both have very, very different stances on what does it mean to be transgender. And I think that's going to be really interesting in the new film, in the new footage that we have, where what it means to James, it's not about appearance, it's about who I am inside, where Ashley, it's very much about who she is on the outside and how people perceive her.
That was photographer and filmmaker Jean Fisher and psychology professor Dr. Susan Nolan discussing transgender discrimination and Fisher's two documentary shorts, Passing Ellenville and All About Amy. In recent years, it has become more and more common for arrangements in the sex trade to be made online and behind closed doors. A lot of the time, it's not among consenting adults. It's forced prostitution or sex trafficking. So anti-sex trafficking groups and local law enforcement are looking to recruit eyes and ears right where these crimes are taking place, at the approximately 1,500 hotels in the Bay Area in California. Shireen Abdul reports for KALW's Cross Currents.
The Oakland Courtyard Marriott is in downtown Oakland. It's known to cater to business travelers. In the lobby, people get on and off the elevators. A family of tourists waits in line at the registration desk. It's a scene most of us are familiar with. But under the surface of this normal hotel activity, something criminal could be occurring. Sex trafficking. It's not always obvious what's going on beyond the lobby.
Whether there is a lot of video equipment set up in the room, whether there's a use of a ton of towels, and it seems like more than one person's been staying in that room.
Betty Ann Hagenaugh is executive director at the Bay Area Anti-Trafficking Coalition. Her organization is working to broaden efforts to stop sex trafficking beyond the usual law enforcement approach. They want to recruit eyes and ears right where these crimes are taking place, at the approximately 1,500 hotels in the Bay Area.
not only our front desk staff and hotel housekeeping staffs on the front lines of seeing not only who checks in, but who they check in with, how they check in, whether they use cash or credit or are willing to show their ID, but also the usage of the rooms, housekeeping, reporting what they're finding in the garbage cans.
The Oakland Courtyard Marriott is one of many hotels in the Bay Area that's already participated in trainings to recognize and report sex trafficking. One thing the training does is teach employees how to work together. From the front desk to housekeeping to security, each department might see different warning signs that add up to a big picture.
And it seems a little bit odd because people have been coming and going from that room. Their do not disturb sign has been up the whole week they've been with us.
Hagenau says a lot of hotel workers may have heard the term sex trafficking, but they don't know much about it.
And then they just go through a short training, even 40 to 50 minutes of training, and the amount of personnel that at the end of that go, I think I've seen something, or I've had clients come in and ask me about the massage parlor next door or a restaurant down the street that seems pretty sketchy.
Marriott International is one of many in the tourism industry that has signed a code of conduct called the Ending Child Prostitution and Trafficking, or ECPAT code. That means they've pledged to train all their employees everywhere. Still, there's a lot of stigma around the issue. The Marriott turned down multiple interview requests. Hagenau says getting hotels to really commit isn't always easy.
Because if they were to say, oh, sign us up to that code, or yes, we should have a training for our employees, to some extent, it's an admittance that you actually have some potentially illicit activity happening on your properties.
There are some hotels in Oakland where that's a real and obvious problem, according to Elizabeth Smith. She was a victim of domestic child sex trafficking and is now an advocate for commercially sexually exploited youth.
I mean, on those TVs, there's like free porn, like on the channels. And they used to not have mirrors above the bed, but now all of a sudden they do. And so it's like, why, like in an area like this, why would you do that? Well, because now there more people are going to come to their hotels for that specific reason.
Smith says it doesn't just happen at some motels or hotels. It could happen anywhere. It's just a matter of price.
If a child is being exploited and the exchange happens in a car, it's not going to cost as much. Whereas if you go to a motel room, it's going to cost a little bit more. If you go to a hotel room, then it's going to be more expensive. So it's all about where you're purchasing the girl from.
And unfortunately, there are people buying and selling exploited youth in a lot of places.
It's sad that we just have these vulnerable children right in the middle of it who are usually the ones getting penalized in some type of way.
They come from all parts of our community and that they are victims.
Teresa Drenick is the spokesperson from the Oakland District Attorney's Office, which also does anti-trafficking education. Drenick used to be an attorney. She says her very first case opened her eyes to the issue, a young girl who was arrested for prostitution.
I could see her face in front of me as though I met her yesterday. She was about 13 years old and had really, really long, curly, wavy red hair and really pale skin with freckles. She looked like sort of little orphan Annie.
The girl had gone out with friends when she was abducted. She was held for days in a motel room.
And she was, you know, her clothes were taken from her, and she was forced to dress in really sexy clothes. And she was put on the corner and then into the hotel room and then the corner and the hotel room.
Drenick had to ask the girl exactly what happened and what she did with the men who purchased her.
And I just will never forget that this, you know, her the blush that came over her just sort of from her neck, and it rose up over her face of a teenager who was so upset and so embarrassed. And she just, you could see physically that it was almost making her sick to her stomach and sick inside to talk about what had happened to her. And I think that for me was just eye-opening. I was probably all of 26 years old at the time, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing.
Believing it was just the first step for Drenick. Now she works with the Human Exploitation and Trafficking Unit, also called Heat Watch, out of the Oakland DA's office. They collaborate with law enforcement, prosecute offenders, and hold trainings to raise public awareness. Drenick says that awareness is the most important step in combating sex trafficking.
if you see something and in your gut you know it's not right, and there are red flags there that are telling you something is wrong, don't just sit back and think someone else will take care of the problem.
That advice is working. According to the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, reports of human trafficking in California have doubled since 2012. It's not necessarily that there is more trafficking, but more likely that people are noticing and doing something about it. And that's a good start. But for Drenick and others working on this issue, it's just that. The end goal is for sex trafficking to be completely eradicated. In Oakland, I'm Shireen Adil for Cross Currents.
This week, we bring you another installment of the 51% segment called Force of Nature from Dr. Sharon Ufberg. She is co-founder of the personal development wellness company Borrowed Wisdom in Napa Valley, California. She also blogs for the Huffington Post. This week, she interviews Amy Miller, artistic director and founder of Transcendence Theater Company, the company best known for its award-winning Broadway Under the Stars concerts in wine country, and for playing an important part in helping save Jack London State Historic Park from closure. Miller has appeared on Broadway, as well as in numerous television shows and commercials. Now in its fifth season in Sonoma, California, Transcendence Theater Company impacts the community while presenting Broadway performers and more to wine country audiences. Ufberg asked Miller what inspired her to create the theater company.
Transcendence is the actual word means excelling, surpassing, or going beyond the usual limits. And I kind of hit a moment in my career where we were asking the deeper questions of life, like how can you be of more service to the world? How can you make a difference through art? And it's kind of motivated joining and bringing the whole community together to really make a difference here in wine country and in Sonoma.
Could you share your story about really what really reflects the impact of your work and what you're really doing there with Transcendence Theater? It's such a brilliant story. I want you to share it with others.
Well, thank you. Well, we really are using art, which is what art is, to serve the community and uplift the entire energy and quality of life of the town, to really connect the community with the art, have them participate in the art with the artists, and experience it together so they can have a collective experience and then go out and take that energy of transcendence and have it impact their lives and inspire their lives on a daily basis. So what's amazing, especially with seeing Broadway performers and the beauty outdoors in nature in this park, we've been able to join together and save the park from closure. And I think one of the great things about the park is that it's bringing a lot of people together. We have over 300 volunteers. We have Rotary members in the town who have made picnic tables. The wineries are pouring in support of the park. We've had a lot of programs that we've done with different nonprofits and organizations in the town, specifically the Boys and Girls Club, where people volunteer, allow the children to have an experience outdoors, and they join together and are having this collective shared experience, and they have a purpose, and it's really, truly spreading an energy that's affecting so very many people's lives.
I think one of the beautiful pieces of the work is that here we have Broadway actors from Los Angeles, from New York City, who come over the summer and really share their incredible talent with the community. So it's not just that you put on these amazing shows that people get to come and watch under the stars, but you're also doing work. You know, you have a children's camp, right? I know you do things. You know, tell us about some of those individual projects that you do that actually really change and give people an opportunity who are 3,000 miles away from Broadway to really get a taste of what that feels like.
Yes, I mean, that's one of the great responses that we've had from the artists that have been involved from Broadway and from Los Angeles, New York, is that they're able to come here and connect with the community. So we do a lot of different things. One of the simple things that we do, even before the shows, is all of the artists are out there at the pre-show picnic meeting and greeting the patrons and connecting to the patrons. So it heightens the theater experience when the patrons actually see them perform on stage. We have, like you mentioned, a kids camp that we've done for 5 years that all the artists love being a part of that. And we do Transcendence Connects projects where we pick different nonprofits in the town. We've done work with the Wilmar Family Center for Grief and Healing, where we've done workshops with the children and integrate the artists through that. We've sung at Alzheimer's homes. We've worked with the developmental centers, and we're doing projects of volunteering our time to help clean up Jack London State Park this year. So we're really, we believe at Transcendence that all of life is a work of art. So it's beyond just what's on stage. It's a full integration in the community. Even this year we did a program with the Sonoma Charter School and the Boys and Girls Club, and there was a mural that was created by community members and the children. So it's just integrating art at so many different levels and enhancing that connection to a community.
Well, it's very palpable for those lucky enough to experience the shows how genuine the feeling is from each of the artists that are on stage that are coming and putting their whole heart and soul into it. Can you tell us about some of the plans that you're working on right now?
Yes, we're entering into our fifth season. Our Broadway Under the Stars in Jack London State Park is the main stage shows. We're in the thick of that season now. We're actually rehearsing right now for our second show. So we do four main stage shows, and we'll continue to evolve that. The wonderful thing about these shows is they are a wide variety and eclectic mix of music, from pop music to Broadway music. And it's actually made a great fan base for some people that don't even, you know, they come to the shows and they never liked musicals before, and they leave having the best night ever. So we're working on that. We have a secondary series called the Transcendence Artist Series that's focused on presenting, you know, exceptional artists throughout wine country. So we're developing that and plans for the new year. We've expanded and have holiday shows. And then we're always developing more expansive education and community programs. So we've been strategizing how to really continue to make an impact throughout the entire community. And even this year, we've added an intern program to get more of this. I always say, we're bringing the whole community together to build the big dream. So we're trying to find all the different outlets for that to be possible.
I think one of the really interesting pieces to this Transcendence Theater Company is that it didn't start out necessarily with a dream to open up this in Sonoma, California. How did you end up there? I know you didn't, you know, start with that as the center of your dream.
How we ended up in Sonoma?
Yeah, how it was really a journey to find a place that really spoke to the vision that you had with some others.
Yes, we were looking where would be a wonderful town for this idea to come into being. And we actually went on a research trip across the entire United States looking for that town and researching different theaters across America. And we had chosen in California, we wanted a place that it's an international tourist destination. We wanted a place where people from around the world were already visiting. And then we wanted to find a community that was immersed in nature and was very focused and community oriented. And so Sonoma, when we researched, is just the perfect place for that to happen. And then serendipitously, when the parks were slated to close, environment and nature and connecting people outdoors was such a big part of the vision. So when the park was slated to close, the fact that art could come in and join the community together and save that park from closure has just been one of the biggest blessings of this entire experience, because $5 of every ticket goes to the park, and collectively we've raised over $187,000 to help keep that park open.
Thank you so much, Amy Miller from Transcendence Theater Company. Always such a joy to talk about such a wonderful project. This is Dr. Sharon Ufberg on Force of Nature for 51%.
And that's our show for this week. Thanks to Patrick Garrett for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1411.